You will be able to feed about up to 40 million people with it.
Well, of course, if you just have 40 million people, that sort of takes that care.
Probably. But if you will put it in that dandy plate, you might have a chance of making it. And this is what he proposed here. It's a very exciting proposal. And of course, the Weinberger, one of the outstanding scientists in the country, the director of Oak Ridge Lab, he's on another mission where they're looking at power reactors to have along the coast of India to convert the seawater into fresh water. And this is, of course, another exciting proposal. But the problem here is, who's going to put up the dough? Who's going to put up the cash to get this thing going? And this, of course, is what's disturbing. Now, the reason that they're going to be able to make it, if they do go this route, is because of a couple of unusual findings. And that is, they have developed short-stemmed wheat and also some rice that also does well, so that you can fertilize and get much heavier production without having the barley tip over. See, for a while now, we were in the state of India, we said, well, what you need are fertilizer plants. So we built a lot of fertilizer plants over there, which of course are rusty, up until recently, because they knew it wasn't any good because they take the fertilizer, they fertilize their wheat, and the wheat would all tip over and that was the end of it. Of course, India needs a lot more. It needs some management. It has to get under control, a distribution system, and a lot of other things. But this is one of the most exciting things I have. Now, I hope that while I'm here, we can show an unusual film that shows the poverty of India and to discuss the problem of poverty, overpopulation, and hunger. And I hope we can have one of our discussions on that, our evening discussions. Listen up to this. Now, there's a good chance that the first utilization of this conversion, the production of power and the conversion of seawater to fresh water overseas may not be in India, but maybe in the Sinai Peninsula. There's a very good possibility of this. This is under study at the present time. And of course, they need water there very badly. There is not a good source of water. There's also another interesting proposal there, and that brings up the whole subject of utilizing nuclear devices to make large lakes or big canals. And there is a proposal for Tunisia and also Egypt, where they have a large area in their country, which is down to about 400 feet below sea level, like a large dry lake. What they're proposing is by utilizing nuclear device to build a canal from the sea down to the large dry lake. And then it'll be a fall, a drop, you see. They'll put a power station there so that you use the water flowing in and get power out of it. And then you'll have large inland lake, which can also be used for commerce. People will have a place to live, and they hope that the evaporation from this will be sufficient so that the water can keep coming in. It's rather interesting proposal. The other proposals on utilizing nuclear detonation for peacetime uses is to build a canal, a sea level canal from the Atlantic to the Pacific in the region of the Panama. There are five proposals there for various areas, depending on who is mad at us and who we're mad at down there. There's been a good deal of study on it. There's also been some preliminary ecology studies done. That is, we have sent teams down there to study the wildlife and the plant life and so forth. It would be preparatory to doing this. I don't know if they will go with a nuclear device. It's by far the cheapest way. Depending on the location you choose, it may be from one fourth about to one tenth as expensive using nuclear devices versus TNT. Like one of the choice spots would cost about $670 million using a nuclear device, where it would be $6 billion using TNT. But there's a lot of polemic now surrounding the question of whether we should go a nuclear route, because they say, well, there's a contamination problem here. Ideally, is that we would detonate something, some large underground or canal or something in this country first. We get the idea that we are willing to do it within our continental limits before we go outside. of course, at the present time, with the present state of our agreement on no release of fallout outside the continental limits of any country, this is precluded at the present time. We can release a device in this country provided it stops at the border. And the same with Russia, and we're both still loyal. There's also the proposal to build, and it would be good for this, to blow harbors in Australia and Africa and probably some other places. Now, one of the real realizations, and I hope they go this route in Australia, of course, a lot of Australia is just barren wasteland and dry land. I mean, it's really arid. And they could really benefit by a very large explosion, a couple of them, inland there, to make a large inland sea to catch, or inland lake, to catch a lot of the water that just comes, is just very seasonal. But if they could catch it in the lake, it would be a great thing for them. All right, just a couple of more benefits from this. I was going to tell you about a lettuce picker. Maybe I can do it in a couple of sentences. You've heard of Keller, Dr. Keller, Edward Keller, and he's always got an idea of minutes. Some of them are good and some of them are bad. He's usually fighting the planet falling about something, like whether we build an ABM system or something like that. But he one day came to one of my friend of mine was in the Applied Science Department at Davis, the first Keller also had his appointment with the government did. And he says, you're going to build a lettuce picker, you know. And they built a lettuce picker based on the radiation principle. You see, if you have a radiation source here and a detector here for the radiation, this is really a gauge of density. You can intersperse radiation material in here and tell you how dense that material is. This principle is used a regular industry today. That's why ketchup is easier to get out of the bottle. When I was growing up, you know, you had to take the bottle and you know, oh, like this, you know. You don't have to do that too much now, because many of them are using a gauge that tells you how to make the right thickness of ketchup. But this is also used as a gauge for metals to get the right thickness and very thick. Well, in the case of lead, the way up till recently, you know, you go along and you do like you women do when you're messing up the fruit in the supermarket, you know. You have a few of them and then ruin it for the next guy. That's sort of what was happening in the lettuce industry, you know. You have a few of them and say, well, is this solid enough, you know? Well, this device now that they have has a radioactive source there. It runs along probably two rows at a time, and it's running, the belt is running in reverse, so it's moving down about 2 miles an hour. And this thing, detection says, this isn't right. This isn't right enough, and it goes on. And then as soon as it says it's right, it's coded into a click and off, and it rolls up a belt, and it goes on the truck. It's part of our real neat deal. But we can get into the implications of this, how many people it puts out of business. Those that were picking the lettuce before, and the lettuce peelers and pickers. The radiation of male insects is an interesting thing. We have essentially wiped out the millions of dollars we lost each year from the schoolworm infestation, say, in Florida. And in some islands, there has a wider application now to use against other insects. The principle here is that if you sterilize the male, you can essentially wipe out the race. And this is what happens. You sterilize the male schoolworm, which makes them one. And the first year in the long spring. And this has been a very successful procedure, and it's now being extended to some other insects in some other areas at a great city in livestock law. I've already alluded to some of the space applications using these power sources in space for a sort of battery. We have a system upstairs now. It's classified now, but when I was consulting on it, it was unclassified, so I can tell you about that much of it. And the It's a transmitter powered by plutonium, probably 238 or some other isotope. And you see here, you've got something that's emitting heat and it will emit heat in the case of plutonium 238 for 9 years. That's a 9-year half life. So it's electronics that are going to go haywire with the battery. See, no moving parts. And if you put four of these things upstairs in proper orbit, as we do have, I don't know how many we have up there now. I know the planned water was unclassified, which we have four. And it's so, this transmitter is so fixed, so that if you have a receiver here where you can sight in on it, no matter where you are, underground, underwater, in the air, or on the sea, on land, anywhere, you can zero in and be within the. Well, it used to, when I was in the business, they figured it was within, maybe 100 or a few hundred feet. They have it down better than that now. So you'll really know where you are, huh? It's kind of handy sometimes. And it's a remarkable accomplishment, I think. You've heard of some recent underground explosions recently. And some of you who follow the stock market have noticed that EGG stock went from 42 up to 65 over the past 6 months, following the test of Gas Buggy. Gas Buggy was an underground explosion to test the feasibility of increasing the porosity of underground rock to release natural gas. See, there's a lot of natural gas, but because of the porosity of rock, it's not released. And there's a big effort right now to utilize it in mining and in geology. And Larry can tell you probably more about this at some time that he can mention today on his pipe. I've already mentioned power plants. And the thing I haven't mentioned is probably what I know most about, and that is utilization in biology and medicine. The great advances that have been made in biology during the last 20 years exceed that probably of all time to 20 years ago. And the chief reason for this is that we have all these radioisotopes and we can trace out the various chemical processes outside of the body and inside of the body and really learn many secrets that were heretofore unavailable to us by the techniques available. The remarkable technology that was developed in this area is indeed exciting. And of course, in the area of diagnosis and therapy, there too, it's been a remarkable progress made. We have devices now that, in the real well-equipped medical centers, where they can more or less get the picture of many of the organs of your body or your brain. They can see, at least in many types of tumors, the exact location and the size preparatory for any therapeutic or surgical intervention. And in the area of diagnosis, especially in recognizing the functional deficiency, whether it's the kidney tire and so forth. The progress there is indeed exciting. Now there is another benefit, I guess, to nuclear detonation. It is on this subject that I will close. And that is that with the advent of nuclear energy and the realization of the power available within nuclear energy, for many thinking people, it was really the end of materialism. Because up to that time, many people regarded things made of concrete and steel were essentially indestructible. But with the advent of nuclear energy, realized that they too were just another puff of smoke. And for the thinking men then, they realized that it wasn't the material things that were lasting, but only the spiritual things that were lasting. And perhaps this might be one of the greater benefits. That concludes my presentation. It's time for the next one, but this is the subject that I want to discuss with you.